This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture, and it's time for Bookmark. I'm Jasmine Shamsuddin with resident literary genius here, Uma Pagan on PK Pakan.
Hey, Shaz. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. It's been an exciting 2 days, I think, with NASA landing a robot on Mars.
Well, it has been for me. I may have geeked out a little bit on yesterday's Evening Edition. I could barely find my words to explain what was going on. But yes, Curiosity rover landed on Mars yesterday. It's part of a, I think it's going to be there for 2 years, and basically drive around before, yeah, you know.
It had a rough entry, didn't it?
It had a cool entry. The entry, it's supposed to be rough. In the sense that, you know, when you're traveling at that speed, when you get into the atmosphere, you know, it's 2,100 degrees Celsius, and they had to plan all these four different steps, actually, to probably safely get it on the ground. In the past, the rovers actually crash land in, like, this giant airbag, in, like, a ball,
right,
and they bounce around a bit.
And could not open, or?
No. But this time, they actually, it was planned to precision. They had it come down, they dropped the heat shields, then the parachute goes up, which slows it down some more. Then they eject another landing craft, which then uses retro rockets to, you know, slowly get it down and decelerate. And then finally, that landing craft lowers Curiosity using these nylon
threads,
ropes, whatever you want to call them, and then cuts away before it crashes into Curiosity. So therefore, it doesn't disturb any of the dust on the surface of Mars not ruin the instruments. So, I mean, for me, this is exciting just because I don't think people know that it's a big deal. They get, wow, rover, Mars, Curiosity, amazing. But I think the human smartness, the human
that went behind all that,
it's just prodigious how clever these people are over at NASA. And if even one small thing went wrong, kaboom, right? Everything had to be perfect. And just amazing. It just shows what we're capable of.
Yes. And of course, any of these techniques or any of these ideas, do you think were preempted by anything you've read in fiction?
I think a lot of them were actually thought about in science fiction, right? So Mars in particular, I mean, that's what we're talking today about, books on Mars. And Mars in particular has held great fascination for science fiction writers. I mean, so the first, actually the most significant work on Mars was probably this earliest significant work was by a German guy called Kurd Laßwitz, yes, and it was in 1888. Right?
1888.
And it was called Two Planets. And I've never read it because I believe it was only translated into English in 1971. So I've never been able to get myself a copy, but I need to get that. And of course, 10 years later came H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. Now, War of the Worlds isn't really, it's a Martian novel in that Martians invade Earth, but it's not really a book about Mars. It's more a kind of, you know, subgenre, right, of Martians coming, because we don't hear anything about their own planet, except they're in trouble and that's why they've come to Earth. So the big one for me to kick off with is probably Princess of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs, which was made into the John Carter movie.
This is
right?
A very old book, right?
1912.
Wow.
Right? John Carter, the movie, didn't do too well in the box office.
Okay, who is John Carter and why are, you know...
So here's the thing.
He's someone, isn't he?
No. So Edgar Rice Burroughs invented this character. Okay. It's part of pulp
novels.
That's
where it came from.
Exactly. So A Princess of Mars was the first John Carter novel. Well, actually, it was published as serialized fiction in magazines because that's what they used to do back then. I miss serialized novels. But anyway. and so it was between February and July of 1912. And, you know, he wrote for money. Edgar Rice Burroughs, you know, made a living. He made a very good living writing Tarzan stories and John Carter stories. And now John Carter of Mars is not a hard science fiction novel. So it's a pulp novel. It's like a Western set in space.
It's like Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what Gene Roddenberry was going for. He was emulating this, you know, John Carter style, Edgar Rice Burroughs style, right? Because even in Star Trek, they didn't spend too much time worrying about the science. Mm. They just wanted the drama, the characters. I mean, that's what people read this kind of pulp fiction for, right? They didn't care if it was scientifically feasible. They just wanted this guy captured by evil green aliens, and then he's going to save a princess and falls in love and does everything anything in his power to, like, win her heart.
And he can talk to his watch.
And so, yeah, and they have tricorders. Well, John Carter didn't have tricorders. But anyway, so, and, you know, basically John Carter, the character, he was transposed from the, you know, American Civil War, and so therefore, you know, it was very rooted in on Earth, mm-hmm. and it was just set on a planet called Barsoom, which is Mars. What they called Mars in this story. And the Western, the structure of the story was very Western. A man with like these, how do you say?
I think John Wayne.
Alien sensibilities. Yeah, he's alien sensibilities in the sense that, you know, he's from Earth and uh-huh. he's like, he's new to this planet and stuff. And it begins in the, it begins in the Old West after the Civil War, and he's got nowhere else to go. He's got nothing else to do. And then suddenly he just falls through his bed, kind of, and finds himself, you know,
kind of like Dorothy
on a strange planet. Exactly, right? And you know, he alights himself on this planet, and he finds himself with more strength because, you know, he's got well-developed muscles, and based on the low gravity of Mars, he can, you know, like jump around and you know, leap tall buildings with a single bound. Yeah, and you know, he impresses the Martians, and they take him prisoner. But these skills prove to be quite useful because, you know, as he's confronted by these immense green monsters and get captured, he rises up among their ranks and eventually meets this princess who he falls in love with, and it's very soap opera-ish, right? So the reason I like Edgar Rice Burroughs is because of that. I think the idea of Mars has always appealed to us because it is our neighbor. It is this probably the most inhabitable planet in our solar system. Mm-hmm. Once we, you know,
as opposed to Uranus.
Yes, as opposed to my anus.
Uranus.
And you know, when we actually terraform the planet and whatnot, right? Mm-hmm. And it's also easy. I won't say easy to get to, but you know, the most reasonable to get to. Because after the Apollo program went to the moon, the next plan for NASA was
Mars.
To go to Mars, right? I mean, they've been having this plan since the 60s. And so, you know, the Edgar Rice Burroughs novels don't actually give you a great insight into the Red Planet. They just actually, you know, give you a good insight into how science fiction authors mm-hmm. kind of perceived other worlds. And I think that's important, because I think that's what these folks at NASA and these folks at, I think they've inspired by reading these sorts of things and, you know, being dreaming of other places, right? That's the true definition of a romantic, right? Dreaming of being anywhere else but here. And I think that's exactly what Edgar Rice Burroughs did well over the course of, what, 14 novels or something?
Right.
Yeah.
But here's a question. I mean, science fiction writers, you know, you have, what, how many, 8, 9 planets to choose from?
Yes.
You know, what was the romance about Mars and not, say, Uranus or Saturn or
Venus?
Know?
But I think the idea is that Mars, that is rooted in some science fact, in the sense that, you know, we're going to Mars because we think we can, we've had hints for the longest time that there may be mm-hmm. microorganisms there and there may be signs of life, and, you know, it may be a place that we could actually one day colonize, right? Venus is too hot, the rest of it's kind of too far, you know, some are just big gaseous balls.
Yeah, I could say something here, but
you're withholding yourself. I'm very impressed. And so the Edgar Rice, sorry, there were 11 novels, not 14. I got that wrong. So the Edgar Rice, John Carter novels, pick them up. I mean, the great thing about it is because of the movie, they've, of course, reprinted all the novels now. So now it's super easy to get. Now you can actually, I mean, they were not hard to get, but you'd have to do some digging. You'd have to go online, and our bookshops didn't necessarily carry all of them. But, you know, if you go down to Borders now, you've got all of it in like 4-volume sets, which aren't very expensive. Mm-hmm. And they're great, fun reads. Don't expect to learn anything about Mars.
Please.
But if you're a dreamer, and if you're like most science fiction readers tend to be, mm-hmm. it's a blast.
Okay.
They don't need to make this into a movie. They need a TV series, right? Because it's just so mm-hmm. it's so much fun. Yeah. Well,
speaking of blast, we're not talking about Uranus today. We're talking about Mars, of course, in conjunction with the robot landing, the Curiosity landing on Mars.
That's right.
Just a little bit of trivia. I don't know if this is true or not. I can't verify it. But someone has tweeted, Iqbal M, said that one of the smart NASA engineers working on Curiosity is a Malaysian. Her name is Florence Tan.
Fantastic.
I don't know if it's true.
Well, I hope it is.
So cool, eh?
That's very cool. Yes. Congratulations, Florence Tan, if that is true.
Yes, if that's true. Okay, otherwise, we have just been poked.
We have.
Okay, well, anyway, we're talking about Mars and books that were inspired by the Red Planet. Red Planet? Mars?
The Red Planet, correct.
Red, okay. Coming up, we have Red Mars and Voyage here on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And it's Bookmark today on The Bigger Picture with Uma Pagan, BK Pakin, and Stephen Baxter has written a book called Voyage. This was a while ago. I have not read this one. I've read Evolution.
Mm-hmm. Any good?
A good read. Oh,
I haven't
awesome
read Evolution.
Read. Yes. It's, you know, how the Earth evolved from the time of the dinosaurs and what humans evolve into 50 million years from present time.
Oh, very cool. No, Stephen Baxter is very, very good. This one's actually one of his early books. I don't know if it was his first science fiction. I don't think so. I need to check that out. But so Voyage by Stephen Baxter, right? This one is what we were talking about earlier, presupposes that Kennedy didn't die. So the idea is that he believes that, you know, with Nixon in the White House, mm-hmm. the kind of ambition and urge for interplanetary exploration kind of died down. You know, he wasn't Kennedy. I mean, I guess he was a little bit more of a pragmatist.
And yes.
So the next step for the Apollo missions was actually supposed to be a voyage to Mars, but NASA was pulled back. And I guess funding was, you know, funding's been a problem for NASA ever since the very beginning. And so Baxter writes this story, this alternate world story in where Kennedy's alive, and he imagines what would have happened if Kennedy had actually convinced the nation that it's time to go to Mars.
Right.
And it's very, very cool. I mean, first of all, I have to talk about the toys in this book. The toys in this book are great. I mean, if you're reading science fiction, you enjoy the kind of imaginary things that people could build, right? Stephen Baxter populates this novel with all kinds of cool gadgets and gizmos and how you're going to get blasted into space and so on and so forth. And he ties all of this technology, I think Tom Clancy, right? And how well Tom Clancy kind of ties in military tech into a plot. And Stephen Baxter does that very well. He ties it back into the narrative very well. He kind of gives you a nice history of the Apollo missions. And this is where the strength of the book lies, is because, you know, the history of the Apollo missions, you know, it's when you sneak in the fake stuff.
Right.
Right? And that's good. When you tie that and mm-hmm. in very cleverly, like, you know, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, stuff like that,
sure.
You know. You know, it works really well. And of course, it's not just, it's hard science fiction in that sense where, you know, the tech is very detailed and all that, but it's a very character-driven book, and he kind of strings this story around based on a few bunch of characters, and I think there's like a German rocket scientist. There's a Polish rocket scientist who detests the Germans because he was in a concentration camp. So mm-hmm. yeah, and so they've got all these weird characters. There's an African American astronaut on the Mars missions. There's a geologist. There's a bit of love stories, and all these things going on based on a very realistic look at what would have happened in this alternate subjunctive history, right?
Right.
So yeah, I highly recommend Voyage by Stephen Baxter. I mean, I enjoyed this book. It was a great trip, right? I mean, you know, they've got plenty of Star Trek references and 2001 Space Odyssey references, and that's just for like geeks and fans, and,
sure.
and you really enjoy that. You really enjoy that stuff. This is the kind of thing that would actually make for very, very good would make a very, very good movie. I mean, you know, Steven Spielberg or Ron Howard or something could actually translate this into something very, very fun to watch, because it's not just a lot of science fiction writers tend to forget the characters, and a lot of science fiction readers tend to forget the characters as well, and Stephen Baxter writes his characters very well. Okay. So if you're the kind of guy that likes, or gal that likes alternate histories and subjunctive histories and all that stuff, this is a great one about our first steps to Mars.
Very good.
Voyage by Stephen Baxter.
Okay, last book on this Mars-related theme today.
Trip.
Is, yeah, trip, exactly.
Trip.
Kim Stanley Robinson, Red Mars.
Yeah, so...
I heard of this one.
Ah, okay. So, oh, no, you have to read this one. This one, so this is one of my favorites. It's got two sequels, Green Mars and Blue Mars. And Red Mars is the first in the trilogy. It's about John Boone is this guy who he's the first person who gets to Mars. It's 2020, and his job is to kind of set it up for the colonists that are gonna get there eventually, and 100 colonists arrive, and they are made up of Earth's most intelligent people, and their job is it's a very utopian vision. Their job is basically to create the best possible world.
Okay.
You know, as a colony, right? And so the colony's been prepared for them. You know, it's got materials and minerals and all this stuff that has been dropped over several years. And, you know, all they have to do is, you know, sit around and determine the best course of the future for Mars. What's interesting about this book is it's so much about politics and society, right? So all Kim Stanley Robinson does is he kind of transposes this, well, not just transposes, but, you know, kind of predicts our present state almost. So some people want to leave Mars as it is because they don't want to touch the planet. Some people want to terraform it, make it into, you know, this more like Earth, as much as Earth as possible. Then there's the whole capitalist idea. They just want to make as much money as possible.
Yes.
And so it goes back to the same debates we're having today. Only it imagines, imagine a barren world, imagine an empty world, right? And if you were actually forced to handle these issues with nothing, starting from scratch on a clean slate, how will that debate work out, and how will those debates play out,
right?
And so Kim Stanley Robinson does a great job, but what's cool about the book is it isn't that serious. So it actually, it actually has that sense of wonder, and the way Kim Stanley Robinson writes about Mars. I mean, I've got a great little excerpt or quote, if you will. And it goes, hold on, I'm going to take a breath. Okay. And it goes, Mars was empty before we came. That's not to say that nothing had ever happened. The planet had accreted, melted, roiled, and cooled, leaving a surface scarred by enormous geological features, craters, canyons, volcanoes. But all of that happened in mineral unconsciousness and unobserved. There are no witnesses except for us, looking from the planet next door, and that only in the last moment of its long history. We are all the consciousness that Mars has ever had. Mm. It's beautifully written as well. And it goes on, not everybody knows the history of Mars in the human mind, how for all the generations of prehistory it was one of the chief lights in the sky because of its redness and fluctuating intensity and the way it stalled in its wandering course through the stars and sometimes even reverse direction. It seemed to be saying something with all that, so perhaps it's not surprising that the oldest names for Mars have a peculiar weight on the tongue. Nergal, Magala, Aukuh, Hamarkish, they sound as if they were even older than the ancient languages we find in them, as if they were fossil worlds from the ice age of before. Yes, for thousands of years, Mars was a sacred power in human affairs, and its color made it a dangerous power, representing blood, anger, war, and the heart.
Ooh.
The writing's beautiful. And, you know, you're going to immediately want to read book two and book three. Green and Blue Mars. And, you know, it's a very cool study on how we would actually build a world best suit humanity. And I think it's kind of questions environmentalists and scientists and philosophers and theologians are asking right now.
Right. When was this book out?
This book, wow. I have absolutely no idea. I can't remember the date.
Oh, sorry.
I will look that up and tweet it when I find out.
Very well.
Beautiful little plot devices, very effective narrative, mm-hmm. and you should definitely check it out. Okay. Red Mars by Kim Stanley Robinson.
Thank you very much. Mm. And with that, we wrap up our Mars theme, our trip to Mars.
Trip
today
to Mars.
On Bookmark.
Thank you, Shaz.
This is a Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.